My dear posterity, if you have made it this far, you are determined indeed. How proud I am of you that you have made it this far, that you have not given up. Continue on, my dear ones. For as Abigail Adams once wrote, the habits of a vigorous mind are formed in contending with difficulties. You have read about the formation of the Declaration of Independence and how integral John Adams was to its development. After signing the Declaration of Independence, John Adams wrote to his wife, Abigail, I am well aware of the toil and blood and treasure that it will cost us to maintain this declaration and support and defend these states. Yet, through all the gloom, I can see the rays of ravishing light and glory. I can see that the end is more than worth all the means. John Adams was no plantation owner or wealthy statesman like many of the founding fathers. His great-great-grandfather had emigrated from England in the 1600s and settled in Braintree, Massachusetts, where John was raised on the family farm. His father, besides being a farmer, was also a shoemaker, a member of the town council, a deacon at their Puritan church, and a militiaman. When John was six, he attended a school held in a teacher's home. Later, he attended a Latin school, which he didn't like at all. One day, at the age of 13, he came home from school and told his father he did not wish to attend any more, but wanted to be a farmer instead. So, the next day, his father invited him to work alongside him on the farm. In the heat of the day, drenched in sweat, they trudged through mud up to their knees in the marsh, cutting, lifting, and tying thatch. How do you like farming now? His father asked after the long, exhausting day of work. I like it very well, replied John, quite determined not to return to school. Aye, but I don't like it so well. You shall go to school, insisted his father, knowing John was exceptionally bright. He and his wife wanted John to go to Harvard and become a clergyman. At 15 years old, John rode by himself the 17 miles from Braintree to Cambridge on horseback for interviews at Harvard, the only college in Massachusetts, and he was accepted. His father sold 30 acres of land to pay for his tuition and board, and 15-year-old John soon found himself among 27 other freshman students, all 14 or 15 years old. John soon loved his time at Harvard, excelling in science and math and finishing at the top of his class. John had decided against becoming a clergyman, but he was very gifted at public speaking, and he was drawn to the salary and the public influence which he could have as a lawyer. He soon began studying under attorney James Putnam, and was admitted to the bar 2 years later, at the end of 1759. He began practicing law, and soon met Miss Abigail Smith, who was just a teenager at the time. Unimpressed, he recorded that Abigail and her sisters were not fond, not frank, not candid. When they met again 2 years later, though, John discovered that Abigail was very well read. She had developed into a talkative, smart, and witty young woman to whom John was very attracted, and the two began a deep friendship that turned into a courtship. John and Abigail's courtship continued for a couple of years as John worked to build his law practice. During that time, they exchanged frequent love letters until they were finally married in 1764, he being 29 and she 19. They moved into his cottage in Braintree, which he had inherited from his father, who had passed away 3 years earlier from influenza. 9 months later, John and Abigail's first child was born. They named her Abigail, but called her Nabby. That same year, the Stamp Act was passed by England, which was a catalyst to the American Revolution and which opened a new chapter in the life of John and Abigail Adams. As angry riots caused chaos throughout many colonial cities, John took to pen and paper. His essay, A dissertation on the canon and the feudal law addressed not merely the injustice of the Stamp Act, but also the basic rights and freedoms of Americans, asserting that those rights were God-given. The essay was published in the Boston Gazette and brought notoriety and attention to John. He was suddenly thrust into a group of political activists in Boston, one of whom was his cousin Samuel Adams. Although the Stamp Act was eventually repealed, England forced other heavy taxes on the colonists and sent troops to enforce compliance. In March 1770, in an event that came to be known as the Boston Massacre, British troops fired on a mob of colonists who had come to taunt and heckle the soldiers. The mob eventually threw stones and clubs, causing an outbreak of violence that ended with 5 Massachusetts men shot by the British soldiers. The following day, as angry colonists demanded that the British soldiers hang for the murders, John Adams was asked to be the soldiers' defense attorney. No other lawyer would take the case. It was extremely risky to his career as well as his personal safety, as many colonists did not want to see the soldiers represented with a defense. John believed, however, that all men had a right to a fair trial. John proved himself an impeccable lawyer, convincing the Boston jury that the soldiers were not guilty. Though some colonists were angry at the verdict, many were amazed that John was able to win the case. He became well known in Boston, and his legal practice grew. Soon he was representing some of the wealthiest men in Massachusetts. That summer, he was elected to the Massachusetts legislature. Friction between colonists and England continued to increase, with the Boston Tea Party, followed by the Intolerable Acts, which were laws meant specifically to punish the colonists because of the Boston Tea Party. In 1774, John Adams attended the First Continental Congress in Philadelphia, wherein delegates discussed solutions to the contention. After British troops marched from Boston Harbor to Lexington and Concord in order to seize gunpowder and weapons, John attended the Second Continental Congress, bent on defending the rights of the colonies. But not all the colonies wanted to fight Britain. They agreed, however, to organize a Continental Army. At the suggestion of John Adams, George Washington was named Commander-in-Chief of the Army. The following year, John Adams was part of the committee appointed by Congress to draft the Declaration of Independence. John wanted Thomas Jefferson to write the Declaration, noting later that, "I had a great opinion of the elegance of his pen and none at all of my own." As you well know, Thomas Jefferson did write it. John may not have been as eloquent with a pen, but he was powerful in speech. Of his final debate before Congress on the subject of independence, Thomas Jefferson said, "John Adams was our colossus on the floor. He was not graceful, nor elegant, nor remarkably fluent, but he came out occasionally with a power of thought and expression that moved us from our seats." John and Abigail were both morally opposed to slavery and never owned a slave. "I wish most sincerely there was not a slave in the province," Abigail wrote in 1774. She employed free blacks and helped educate a young black man in an evening school and in their home in 1791. Before the War for Independence, John had sometimes represented slaves who were trying to win their freedom. John hoped that slavery would be abolished. "Every measure of prudence, therefore, ought to be assumed for the eventual total extirpation of slavery from the United States. I have, through my whole life, held the practice of slavery in abhorrence." Abigail, in the meantime, amidst taking care of the farm in Braintree, gave birth to a son, John Quincy, a daughter, Susanna, and then 2 more sons, Charles and Thomas. Susanna died as a toddler in 1770, and in 1777, while John was away serving in Congress, Abigail gave birth to a stillborn baby. Life on the farm was difficult. Much of the time, Abigail raised the children as a single parent, managing the farm and the family finances, which dwindled as John was pulled from his law practice into politics, which paid little. The Revolutionary War caused a shortage of everyday goods such as wool and pins. The value of the dollar dropped, which forced Abigail to scrimp and save more than ever. Throughout the separation from her beloved husband, whom she always addressed in her letters as "my dearest friend," Abigail was determined not to be a summer soldier or a sunshine patriot, as Thomas Paine had written in The American Crisis. She lamented, "Posterity, who are to reap the blessings, will scarcely be able to conceive the hardships and sufferings of their ancestors." Greater hardship and suffering were to come. John was appointed by Congress as a commissioner to France. Abigail insisted that their eldest son, John Quincy, accompany his father, despite the dangers of traveling the Atlantic in winter and during war. She believed deeply that their growing son needed the influence of his father. The voyage lasted 6 weeks and was an arduous adventure indeed. The winds rocked the vessel, the storm so fierce it cracked the main mast. They faced a battle at sea with a British ship, cannons and guns blasting. They were sick, cold, and miserable. John wished he had never set sail, especially with his young 10-year-old son. Despite the odds, they miraculously arrived safely in France. After only one frustrating year, they returned home to Braintree, where John was asked to write a constitution for the state of Massachusetts, a model later used for the U.S. Constitution. He was only home for 104 days before he sailed again to Europe as an American diplomat to Britain, this time taking both John Quincy, who was now 12, and Charles, who was 9. This trip was more successful. John was able to secure a loan from the Dutch Republic for his war-torn and deeply indebted country. He also aided Benjamin Franklin and John Jay in negotiations for the Treaty of Paris in 1782, which marked the end of the Revolutionary War and formalized the victory of the United States. John soon after brought his entire family, including Abigail, with him to Great Britain, where he had been appointed ambassador. In 1788, after 10 years in Europe, John and Abigail were happy to return home with their children to Massachusetts. He hoped to retire from politics, renew his law practice, and work his farm. 9 days after he and Abigail arrived home, however, the U.S. Constitution was ratified, which meant the new country needed to elect a president. John Adams was chosen to serve as vice president to George Washington. After 2 terms as vice president, John Adams was elected president, beating out Thomas Jefferson, who served as his vice president. John was not reelected for a second term, somewhat to the relief of Abigail. She did not enjoy the public gaze and was deeply chafed at the criticism her husband endured. As president and throughout his political career, John considered Abigail his most valued, trusted advisor. The two of them spent John's last months in office in the new executive mansion, later known as the White House. On his first night there, John wrote, "I pray to heaven to bestow the best of blessings on this house and all that shall hereafter inhabit it. May none but honest and wise men ever rule under this roof." His words were later carved into a mantelpiece in the White House, where they have remained. John and Abigail retired to a home in Quincy they called Peacefield. John spent his time farming, writing letters, and receiving visits from children and grandchildren. He reconciled with Thomas Jefferson, who had become a political rival. During the last years of the two former presidents' lives, they wrote each other at least 150 letters. Abigail died in 1818. She and John had been married 54 years. At her funeral, John told his assembled family members, "The whole of her life has been filled up doing good." He rightfully predicted that Abigail's letters would be read for generations to come. John lived to see his son, John Quincy Adams, elected the 6th President of the United States, beginning in 1825. On July 4, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, John Adams passed away at 90 years old. He had wanted to write a letter to Thomas Jefferson, but was too weak. With his esteemed friend on his mind, John Adams' last words were, "Jefferson still survives." Little did he know that Thomas Jefferson had passed away the same day, only a few hours before. In his old age, John Adams wrote to a granddaughter, "The longer I live, the more I read, the more patiently I think, and the more anxiously I inquire, the less I seem to know. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly. This is enough for you to know and to do." John and Abigail Adams had a guiding light of freedom that they followed through a lifetime of unparalleled sacrifice, months and years of separation and hardships hardly imaginable. After years of exertion for the cause of freedom, toward the end of his life, John Adams declared with his quill pen, "Posterity, you will never know how much it cost the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it." Light this lantern, and as it illuminates your way, let it ever remind you of the rays of ravishing light and glory that John Adams envisioned for our country, for his posterity, for mine, and for yours.